And today I want our people and our businesses and the rest of the world to know that the full faith and credit of the United States remains unquestioned. But to all my friends in Congress, understand that how business is done in this town has to change, because we've all got a lot of work to do on behalf of the American people, and that includes the hard work of regaining their trust.
So, do you trust that Congress and the President will do the right thing now? And what is that exactly? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are going to talk about the political and the public policy implications of the resolution of this last crisis and where we go from here with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Good morning, Mordecai.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, what's your take of what happened? First of all, let's talk about why did this happen?
I think we have to understand the transformation of American politics because of the Tea Party. The Tea Party is an insurgency, and we use the word insurgency when we talk about Iraq or we talk about Afghanistan, and it's a sort of politically neutral term. It doesn't describe anybody as a rebel or anything like that. I'm afraid the word insurgency has lost some of its meaning, but it really does apply to the Tea Party, and that in the sense that an insurgency not only is in opposition to the status quo, but an insurgency wants to so transform the status quo that it wants to bring down that regime of governance, that it believes in values that don't even accept the legitimacy of the way the current status quo operates. And I think that's a fair way to describe the Tea Party. Some people joke that they live in a separate reality. I think that's unfair to say. But they view the world and they view the events of the last couple of weeks in such a dramatically different way that they are an insurgency. They do want to revolutionize American government.
Well, why did Speaker Boehner, who's not necessarily of the Tea Party, agree with what the Tea Party wanted to do by attaching the Affordable Care Act to this funding resolution?
I think there's been a major misunderstanding of sort of the numbers within the Republican caucus. The way the media described it is there were sort of 30, 40, 50 Tea Party members who were somehow bullying the rest of the majority. Let's see, the Republicans, I think there are about 240 members of Congress out of 435. And somehow that they're bullying them, that they were forcing Boehner, they were forcing the majority to do something they didn't want. And that's why it was extremely significant to understand Speaker Boehner's behavior when we looked at the final roll call on the final vote that happened that finally brought this to an end. And that of those about 230, 240 Republicans, a majority of them, 144 of them, voted against the compromise. They voted to keep going, to keep fighting. In other words, that the Tea Party was not a minority within the majority. The Tea Party views, or at least their approach, was a majority of the majority. So all in these last 2 weeks, when John Boehner was being responsive to his caucus, he was being responsive to a majority of the majority. He was doing what they wanted.
Well, the Speaker Boehner did say, we fought the good fight, we just didn't win. So why did Speaker Boehner give up?
I think that's, in a sense, it shows how good a politician he is and how good a leader he is, even though he really took his hits over the last 2-3 weeks. In other words, by accepting what the majority of the majority wanted all these weeks, when he turned to them in that final 24 hours and said, we've lost, instead of them, in a sense, toppling him and rebelling and replacing him with someone else, he had the credibility with that majority of the majority for them to say, we have fought the good fight. He has been our leader. He has stuck with what we've wanted. He has fought for what we've wanted. And he's right in reading the political situation, and we have to, it's a time to fold him. And so that is a kind of a different narrative than I think what we've been getting out of the mass media for the last 2 weeks.
Well, looking at who voted in Wisconsin for the for the deal that brought this showdown to an end, it was along party lines, except Congressman Reed Ribble of the 8th Congressional District, Congressman Ribble of Appleton, he voted for the deal to end the government shutdown and to avoid default. But all other Republicans were saying, no, let's keep fighting.
I think that's a terrific insight, Joy, because if the conventional narrative is that somehow there was just this handful of hardcore conservative Tea Party types, well, how is it that of all the Wisconsin Republicans, only one voted for the compromise? And I think that's very significant. After all, we think of Congressman Sensenbrenner as a person who is strictly conservative. And in fact, he was one of the 80 people who had signed the original letter suggesting the idea of a government shutdown as a way to force the repeal of Obamacare. So, for example, when Congressman Sensenbrenner voted that way, we're not surprised. When Paul Ryan voted that way, we're slightly surprised, but it kept his credibility with that majority of the majority caucus. But I was really surprised by Congressman Petri of Fond du Lac, who I knew because we overlapped when I was in the state legislature in the 1980s, and I think he's sort of that old classic moderate conservative Republican, very constructive, very oriented to getting things done. He's very involved in transportation policy. To see that Congressman Petri voted against the compromise is a real indication that indeed this was not an insurgency of a small number of people. And one could further try to strip it back and say, well, maybe some of them are just more conservative than we realized. And I think it's also fair to say maybe some of them didn't want to get primaried. Maybe some of them were cowed by the tactics of the Tea Party, that they're afraid if they seemingly come out of the closet as a moderate that they'll be challenged by somebody from the Tea Party in a primary. But I think Congressman Petri is very solid in his district. He's as widely recognized and widely supported as one would expect. And so I think we should take his vote at good faith, not that he's shaking his boots or that he's afraid of a Tea Party primary.
Is Congressman Sean Duffy of the 7th solid in his district?
I think he's solid in his district. After all, there's been a reapportionment that made his district more Republican since he first got elected after Dave Obie retired. And I think it's fair to describe Congressman Duffy as this sort of new Republican, harder right Republican. I don't know what it takes to qualify as a card-carrying member of the Tea Party, but I think we should associate him with that wing of the Republican Party, that if anybody wanted the moment to say where they stood, you know, sort of on what side of the line in the sand, he was saying, this is where I stand. And that's why I'm so glad that you mentioned Congressman Reed Ribble, that he comes from something of a swing district. It still is a pretty Republican district. And he had a very long description to justify his vote. But he was a minority of his caucus. He was a minority of the majority, and he felt the need to justify why he was going for a compromise.
Well, President Obama, in his remarks yesterday, said that we need to change the way we do business here in Washington. Does that vote indicate to you that that change is going to happen?
I don't think so. And the reason is because to get a majority of votes on the floor without a majority of the caucus, that's known as the Hastert rule. In other words, the speaker, who is the head of the majority party, will only bring something to the floor if the majority of the majority wants to. Nancy Pelosi is right. There'll be many bills that all Democrats would vote for, and all you need is something like, I think it's 17 or 18 Republican votes to pass. But that's not how legislative bodies work. The majority party is the boss, is in charge, and they don't give up the power to control outcomes to the minority party. And that's why I'm sort of pessimistic about the future. I think those 144 votes are solid, and they want to stay in this sort of more insurgent, never-say-die kind of mentality.
We'll talk a little bit more about what now, as we continue talking with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And we'll take your questions and your reactions to the end of the government shutdown and the temporary version of this of default, and wonder what you think of all this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's going to be a cloudy, cool day today, a chance of rain with highs in the 40s and low 50s. Tonight, there is a chance of rain and possibly even snow. Oh no, lows in the 30s. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network coming up this afternoon. It's Central Time. After 4, Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert will look back at some of the coolest toys of all time. Great. Spirograph. Then we will explore news from around Wisconsin during the weekly news roundup. That's Central Time today after 4. We are in our fall membership drive. Actually, this is the last weekday of the fall membership drive, and your support is critically important, especially on this last day. I'm Joy Cardine with Cynthia Schuster, who is here to help make the case for you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right now to make your pledge in support of the programs you count on.
Last hour, we heard from 38 people. Thank you so much for those pledges. This hour, we have a goal of 65 pledges, and these hourly goals are extremely important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussions going strong right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Take a moment and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You name it, you've probably heard about it on the Ideas Network. Politics, current events, advice. It's a valuable service and a service worth supporting. So won't you make your contribution now? Be it $5 or maybe $10 a month. Whatever amount you choose to support Ideas Network programs. This is your chance to make the programs possible at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is easy. All it takes is just a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month or
and
so.
That donation will come back to you day after day in the form of great programs. So make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and please do give as generously as you can.
WPR is probably a preset on your home radio or your car radio, probably your home and your car, and you listen to WPR a lot. So it must be time to become a contributing member.
You can help pay for the station that you listen to so much. So make the switch from someone who listens a lot to someone who listens and contributes and makes it all possible. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station, the one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute to work, and offers great companionship during the day.
The beauty of public radio is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs that you enjoy. Many first-time donors give $5 a month.
And your gift, combined with donations from other listeners, add up to WPR's single largest source of funding. So become our next new member right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, this is Melissa Block with NPR News. Ever toss change in the tip jar at the coffee shop or the deli? Then think about that as a model for supporting public radio. Consider, if you throw just a quarter in the tip jar every day you buy coffee, then you'd be spending $1.25 a week on tips. That's more than $60 a year. You don't think twice about tossing in those coins. And exactly how was the service? Sometimes good. Sometimes not. Well, for the same $60, you can help keep all of your favorite programs on the air. And you don't even have to give it all at once. Simply sign up as a monthly sustainer. $5 will be charged to your credit card each month for as long as you'd like. It's like having a public radio tip jar, only you know that the money going into it is for a great radio service. Here's how to sign up.
Sign up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Cynthia Schuster, and we are asking for your support on this last weekday of the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. It wraps up completely tomorrow, but this is the last time for this fall for the Joy Cardine Show. Please give your gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it, but the whole thing works because you do choose to support it. How about a pledge right now of $10 a month?
How about a pledge of $15 a month, Cynthia? No, I'm just saying that
well, that's a good idea because we have this lovely travel mug for $15 a month. It's made by Clean Canteen, and it can be yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. You can do that sustaining membership of $15 a month, and we will send you as your thank you gift the Wisconsin Public Radio travel mug. You can be drinking your coffee on your morning commute as you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and you will know that you helped pay for the service. You made it possible. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners provide the single biggest piece of our budget here at WPR, so make a pledge of $5, $10 a month, $15 a month, any amount that's comfortable for you, and you'll be doing your part to keep the station going strong. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Cynthia, and thank you to those of you who have pledged already. We are still looking for 57 pledges to make our goal this hour. Thanks to Jim and Heidi from Suamico who pledged. They say Wisconsin Public Radio is a precious resource that we are happy to support, and we are happy you chose to do so. You can choose to do so too at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Okay, a few more minutes before news with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, talking with us about the end of the government shutdown and what's to come next. And we have some callers, so let me take a call from John in Appleton, who will move this conversation forward. Hello, John.
Hi. I just wanted to say I recently became a sustainer, so a large part of that was due to your show.
Thank you, John.
I think, in my estimation, I don't see the reality of the situation changing anytime soon. The districts are way too gerrymandered to encourage the politicians to compromise. And I just don't see anything changing.
Yeah, and Mordecai, you kind of feel that same way.
Right. I think nowadays the new normal is to be very pessimistic as opposed to just plain pessimistic. That sort of everything has become thinkable. The things that were unthinkable, like the full faith and credit of the United States, and not being good on its debt. That concept is now a real concept. And in the run-up to the final compromise, we had voices of members of Congress saying that, breaking the debt limit, breaking the full faith and credit, not keeping our financial promises, that wasn't as big a deal. That wasn't so important. And so I think John has pretty much hit it. The big question is if the Budget Compromise Committee that's co-headed by Congressman Ryan will make any progress, and it's possible but unlikely, and if the majority of the Majority Caucus will take away a lesson from the shutdown, that the shutdown was bad for them politically. And I'm not sure if they really would feel that way, because if you talk about what does it mean to be an insurgent, well, an insurgent is a kind of a never-say-die kind of person, and the smooth running of the government it sounds like a kind of a quaint, old-fashioned feature.
Saul emails, I don't know if the House has learned anything, but I believe the president has finally gotten some spine. Ultimately, a president that caves when challenged is responsible for encouraging unbridled zealots and discouraging the sheep from following their better instincts. So did the president learn something from this, Mordecai?
Well, in game theory, sometimes we talk about sort of the crazy man scenario, or nowadays we should say the crazy person's scenario, in the sense of that if two people are negotiating and one party says, I'm absolutely crazy, I don't care about the implications, you're going to have to compromise, then usually that other side has to back down. In this case, the president changed the dynamic and was, we're both crazy, neither of us is going to back down, and that changed the political event.
Well, we'll talk more about some of the maybe the public policy implications of the next showdown in Washington. And we'll welcome your reactions and your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you're ever in a jam, here I am.
If you're ever in a mess, S-O-S.
If you ever feel so happy you land in jail, I'm your bail.
It's friendship, friendship.
I'm not sure why I played that, but actually I do. We are your friends here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking about whether Congress and the president will ever be friends. The federal government is back in business. The threat of default is over for now, but if there isn't another budget deal in place by January, there could be another shutdown, and there is also another debt ceiling deadline in early February. So we are talking about whether Congress has learned a lesson from this last near crisis, or if we will be facing the same disruption and fear that we had over the last couple of weeks in a couple of months from now. And we'll get back to our discussion with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, in just a few minutes. But I'm Joy Cardine with Cynthia Schuster, and we have the last weekday of our fall membership drive going on, and we are working toward a goal of 65 pledges during this hour. How are we doing, Cynthia?
Well, we're doing pretty well, but we'd still need 48 pledges in the next 23 minutes or so. Thanks if you've already given. If you haven't, you can help us stay on track by making a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might not know that high schools and colleges use Wisconsin Public Radio programs as a part of their curriculum. Educators recognize that students can learn a lot about current events and great books and history and so much more from listening to the discussions on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And your gift makes WPR an educational resource that's available throughout the state and beyond. You have a powerful, lasting influence when you support these programs with a gift at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
And more than 12,000 Wisconsin Public Radio members are now proud, sustaining members. They are the modest heroes who provide steady, reliable source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio.
So join their ranks by choosing a monthly gift amount, say $10 a month or $15 a month, and setting it up on an ongoing basis. It's the best way to support the station you rely on. So become a sustainer right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners, you provide the most significant share of our operating budget. Your donation comes with no strings attached, so we can invest it into programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Your contribution keeps independent public radio services on the air for you and for the entire community at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I don't think that people fully understand that Wisconsin Public Radio is really the basis from which it all began. I'm constantly telling people that you've got a tremendous resource here. You don't have to contribute. I mean, you can go ahead and take the service for free. I tell them, I contribute so you can listen. That always gets them. Here's this tremendous amount of information, which is commercial-free. It's annoyance-free, certainly. And I've got this terrible aversion to commercials, both on television and especially radio. I don't think the people really understand the value that you have right here just flipping on the radio.
Thank you for flipping on the radio, and thank you for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can contribute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Joy Cardine with Cynthia Schuster, and we hope that you will consider a gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might be wondering, how much should I give? Well, that's completely up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs, programs that will keep you informed and entertained all year long.
So make that pledge of any amount right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. When you do, you play an essential part in funding the programs that you count on every day.
Think of your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment into future listening. Give us just a few minutes of your time, and your donation of any amount will come back in return. You'll get a lot of great programs.
Thank you so much if you have pledged already. If you have not, though, help us reach this goal of 65 pledges during this hour. We really want to meet our goals on this last weekday of the fall membership drive. 43 to go. And you can help us do that by pledging at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Cynthia. We will hear how we did at the end of the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about the government shutdown showdown with Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's an email from Boyd. He says, I think you are witnessing the breakup of the Republican Party. As far as I'm concerned, this dissension is much greater than we imagined. I think there will be some major battles between Republicans during the midterm elections, and it will lead to an eventual split. What kind of ripple effect will this have, he wonders. Mordecai.
Well, that is a possible scenario. After all, there have been major parties in American history who have just sort of disappeared, especially the Whig Party, which was the original home of Abraham Lincoln. And the Republican Party was a whole new concept that emerged in the anti-slavery fight. So it's possible that American politics is shifting to the right in the sense of that the Republican Party is going to be more to the right. The Republican Party is going to become the Tea Party, and the Democratic Party will sort of move over to the center and become much more of a center party than a left-of-center party. That's a possibility, but I'm sort of skeptical. I think the two parties are deeply rooted in American political culture, and I think a kind of a radical realignment that Boyd is discussing is less likely than likely.
Well, Mordecai, what do you see happening with Paul Ryan and his counterpart in the Senate sitting down and you're trying to hammer out some budget deal right now? Where are the disputes going to be?
I think it's great to focus on that because I'm guessing there's a real sort of misunderstanding of what this committee is. This is not a kind of a super committee that's charged with creating some grand bargain. Rather, this is part of the Budget Act that was approved by Congress back in the 1970s. In which they expected that the House would pass a budget for the upcoming year and the Senate would pass a budget for the upcoming fiscal year. And then they'd have a conference committee to resolve the differences. That's exactly what's happening. In other words, what they're trying to do is they're trying to come up with numeric targets for each of the appropriations bills for fiscal year 14. In other words, we agree that the transportation bill should be up to X billion dollars. We agree that the USDA bill should be, and so on and so forth. So it's a much more modest goal. Now, naturally, the policy preferences of both parties are deeply embedded in the two different blueprints. But I think it's possible if the members, a majority of the members from each house believes in negotiation and believes in compromise, in other words, that half a loaf is better than none, then something will come of it. But it's possible that people like Senator Sessions will be much, Senator Johnson as well, will be much more hard-nosed, and that this will be a failure.
Jim in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good morning. You know, with all this behind us, it still hasn't fixed the problems because the budget, we have to raise the debt ceiling because we don't bring in enough money to cover our bills, correct? I mean, that's the way it works. So with this with this healthcare.gov failure, you know, right from the start, they hired the CGI federal group to do the website. They had been canned by Canada when they did theirs so poorly. And they're relying now on good, young, healthy people to sign up to fund the Obamacare. If they don't sign up, what is their fallback? What is their plan right now to deal with that? Do they have a plan right now, or are they going to try and figure it out once the money doesn't come in? Because right now, the people rushing to sign up would be those in need of it. It only makes sense. It's common sense.
Yeah. So what's the future of Obamacare, Mordecai?
Well, Jim is depicting one possible scenario, and that could happen. On the other hand, if you look at what happened in Massachusetts, when there was an individual mandate that everybody had to get health insurance, and that there was a modest penalty if somebody opted not to get health insurance, it surprisingly worked quite smoothly, and right now is practically universal in Massachusetts. So I suppose that the people who are in favor of, whether you want to call it the ACA or Obamacare, believe that eventually citizens will comply, even young, healthy citizens, partly because it's the law, partly because it's a good idea in the long run for them, and partly because there is a penalty if they don't.
And I'll clarify that I call it both, but call it Obamacare on occasion because the White House calls it Obamacare, too.
That's right. Yeah.
So will Republicans in the House once again try to derail or defund or delay the Affordable Care Act in any way with this next, this next debt ceiling deadline coming up?
Joy, I think the short answer is yes, in the sense that if an insurgent is a true believer, they come back again and again to fight for their cause. You know, we've gotten to a point where we used to say that good government was good politics, but now the smooth running of the government is no longer considered good politics. It's almost as if we could roughly describe the Democratic Party as the pro-government party and the Republican Party, or at least the Tea Party, as sort of the anti-government party. And that's why I think most people are pessimistic about the future, because these views, this insurgency, is really not going away.
Well, these polls that we see say that most of us blame the Republican Party for the shutdown and what happened. But you're saying that blame won't necessarily translate into anything at the polls?
That's what I'm guessing. I'm speculating that in the November elections, and more importantly in the Republican primaries before the November 14 elections, I think either the passions will have faded, or the people who have that feeling, this new negative image of the Republican Party, will not necessarily be voting in Republican primaries and supporting the more, let's say, moderate figure compared to, let's say, a Tea Party insurgent. So generally speaking, I'm not sure that those public opinion polls are going to translate into a different political reality.
What about the future of Speaker John Boehner? Is he going to stay in that job?
I think he's absolutely solid, because the roll call vote on the compromise indicated that the majority of his caucus was against the compromise and had supported the original proposal. And he did what his majority wanted, as he should have, and therefore they're happy with him and they want to keep him.
And finally, President Obama was saying in his remarks yesterday, not only do we have to come to some sort of budget deal first, he said second, comprehensive immigration reform, and third, a new farm bill. And he wanted all that done by the end of the year. What do you think of, given the partisan divide in Washington, do you think that's going to happen, the immigration reform and the farm bill?
No.
Oh, that's a short answer.
Okay, I'll give you the vaguely longer answer, but not a 50-minute lecture. The political dynamics have not changed. In other words, the so-called losers who voted against the compromise don't feel they lost in the bigger picture. They lost a round, and they're going to come back. They want to win the war. And so for them, I think their opposition to immigration reform is not different from how they felt last week versus today.
Boy, do you want to give us any words of comfort, or you think we're just in for this for the long haul? We had a Victor in Milwaukee who says this is going to keep on going on forever, and ultimately he blames the voters.
Yes, I think that's right. I'm sorry to come across as such a pessimist, but there would be a need for a break, something cataclysmic that would break the current political status quo, and I don't think this was it. Perhaps if we default in February and things turn out to be as bad as they might be, perhaps that would be the event that would really change things.
Well, we'll leave it there. I want to thank you very much for being with us during this shortened edition of the show. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Mordecai Lee is a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And we will talk more about the government shutdown and the showdown and all that coming up in our Week in Review in our next hour, plus other top state and national stories in our Week in Review every Friday after 8. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Checking the weather forecast for today, cloudy and cool, a chance of rain, highs in the 40s and low 50s. Stay tuned for the Week in Review coming up after 8, two of your favorite Week in Review guests will be with us, John Sharpless and Joe Winicky. That's the Week in Review every Friday between 8 and 9. I'm Joy Cardine with Cynthia Schuster, and you are listening to the final weekday of the fall membership drive. This drive is your chance to show your support for all the programs that you listen to throughout the year. Make that important step. When you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 34 more pledges in the next 7 minutes. I know we can do this. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on every day. So thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, the time to do it is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, I hope you've been enjoying the conversation. I don't know if enjoying is the right word, but it's an important conversation to have about the politics of our nation and what it means for public policy in this country. Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, one of our fairly frequent guests on Wisconsin Public Radio, to share with us his analysis of current events. Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just a few minutes of your time. You'll tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
When you use your credit card, it saves time, postage, paper, and it also puts your money to work right away. No matter how much you choose to give or how much, use the next few minutes to make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If there's no other reason to give to Wisconsin Public Radio, think about this. Joy Cardine is here for you every day, 3 hours a day, bringing you the latest news, the latest information about what's going on in the state and the country. She gets up well before you do, I can guarantee it. So to say thank you to Joy, why don't you give a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's a thank you to everybody who works at Wisconsin Public Radio. Cynthia Schuster was a producer-director of this program for some years, and now she is a fill-in host producer. You hear her filling in on this program. You hear her on Central Time and other programs, and she does a lot of producing behind the scenes as well. All of the great guests, all of the wonderful books that we talk about, Cynthia Schuster has had a lot to do with that. It also thanks the best producers in the whole wide world, and I haven't been able to thank them enough myself during this past week because of so busy with the pledge drive. Thank you, Robin Cherry. Thank you, Christy Taylor. Thank you, Bill Martins, my producer directors who go to great lengths to find the very best guests and topics for you to participate in these conversations. Your pledge of any amount shows you that you value what you hear and what they do. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might consider a leadership gift, which would be $100 a month or more, and you would be invited to join the 9XM Leadership Circle. You can make your leadership leadership gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio provides me with in-depth, accurate news from around the state. I also like the music, too. I really like being a sustainer because it is relatively painless. I have a monthly withdrawal from my credit card. I don't have to think about it other than the fact that, oh, it's that time of year, it's time for me to up my pledge. When I'm not listening to a public radio station, I'm probably not listening to radio. I'm Rob from Madison, Wisconsin, and I've been a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio for many years. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio so we can keep this precious resource alive and well.
Thank you, Rob, for being a sustainer. You can be a sustainer, too, with your pledge of $5 a month or $10 a month or $15 a month, anything that you decide at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Cynthia Schuster, and we just have a couple of minutes left in this hour to reach our goal of 65 pledges.
That's right. We only need 32 more pledges in the next 3 minutes or so, and I know that there are 32 of you out there listening, ready to pick up the phone or type in the web address. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift right now is a powerful gesture. It means that you're willing to stand up and be counted as the next member of our Wisconsin Public Radio community. New members are so important. Without you, we wouldn't be able to increase and improve our services as we do every year.
You care enough to listen? Now we ask you to care enough to support your source for meaningful radio. Make your gift of $5 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, maybe you're saying to yourself, well, I'll pledge next time. Well, this is next time. This is it. This is your chance to pledge your support for this show during this membership drive. The membership drive will end tomorrow, but this is the last day for the Joy Cardine Show.
That's right, 888-202-2552, WPR.org. 31 pledges in the next couple of minutes. You fund the programs you rely on when you give at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Shelley from Madison, who pledged and says, I regularly listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and I value the information and its contribution to my lifelong learning. I believe in supporting what I value. Thank you, Shelley. And Marson from Madison says, I've been listening for a long time, and it's time to donate. The sustaining membership gives me the ability to pay a little bit every month while supporting the shows I love. Thank you. You can pledge, too, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.